Adams, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
Twas the day after Christmas, and now for a while, you'll be with the American Adversaries at Drive Time on your AM dial. Lair Adams and the News Talk 660 crew hope you got what you wanted. And here's hoping Obamacare will continue to be stunted. We looked to Santa to help improve the economy, but what we got was a dud, as the Grinch prints more money. Let's hope this new year is better than the last. And remember how much better America was in the past. Folks, our host is the old man with a scythe and the new near-naked baby, Christopher Hart!
Oh, isn't that a image for the mind's eye? All right, welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time, and we hope that you are having a great afternoon, enjoying this beautiful weather here in Central Florida.
And your Christmas was fabulous, and everything you wanted, and the stress is over, we hope.
And exactly that. And that was Lair Adams. I am Christopher Hart, and we're joined in the studio this evening by Mike McBath, a great friend of ours, and he's going to be with us for the whole hour, and we'll talk a little business, and we're going to talk a lot of football, so I hope you'll stay with us and enjoy the show. 407-774-8255 is the number today, and as Lair said, we certainly hope that you folks had a great Christmas, and we certainly did, and after a couple of nights off, though, we're ready to get right back at it. Just a quick program note, we will be here New Year's Eve, but not New Year's Day. So next week, we get one weekday off. That'll be New Year's Day itself. But we will be here New Year's Eve, and we've got a great treat lined up for you, thanks to Johnny Guns. It's the audio year in review. He's done this for us a couple of years now, I think, and he's done a great job. It's a little over 3 minutes, and it's all the highlight and audio clips from the year. So listen up for that. And
I wonder if the words, "you can keep your doctor," period, are in there.
You can plan if you like it. First of all, do want to get down to some business here. Have you guys ever heard of a fellow by the name of William Benny? William Benny. Mike?
I know what a Benny is from football, but I'm not sure of William Benny.
William Benny used to work for the NSA. Matter of fact, he worked there for 30 years, and he worked his way up through the ranks to what they would consider in the civilian NSA a general if he were in the military. So he had high rank in the NSA. And one thing that he did, well, amongst the things that he did, was that he wrote the programs for the internet, for the let me just read from an article that appeared today in the Wall Street Journal. They say it a lot better than I can reword it. The article's entitled "Spy Agency Struggles to Make Sense of Data Flood." William Benny, creator of some of the computer code used by the National Security Agency to snoop on internet traffic around the world, delivered an unusual message here in September, this was in Switzerland, to an audience worried that the agency knows too much. "It knows so much," Benny said, "that it can't understand what it has. What they are doing is making themselves dysfunctional by taking all this data," he said at a private conference here. The agency is drowning in useless data, which harms its ability to conduct legitimate surveillance. The article goes on to get much more elaborate in explaining how all this works. Mike, you were quite successful after your football career in the world of high finance, if you will. I mean, you worked for a major
38 years
international bank,
UBS, Union Bank of Switzerland, and Payne Weber,
and handling a lot of people's money. Isn't there such thing as information overload, and isn't that what this fellow's talking about?
I think
about?
Sometimes we used to call it risk management, in a sense that, you know, there's so much information presented to an individual. Even as an example, if you're a financial advisor, you've got to be able to decipher through that and decide, you know, what is like peripheral, I call it garbage and junk, and what is the reality of what can make a good portfolio for an individual? Because everybody out there has an idea, and I still laugh about just a recent example of what I'm talking about. Turn on the TV. You can't miss by buying gold, right? Put 100% of your IRA in gold. Well, gold's down, what, 30% in the last few months? Did you miss? You missed.
Mm-hmm.
But anybody with a brain and some background will go, hey, that doesn't make sense. All eggs in one basket. But it reflects back to what you're talking about with our wonderful government. I mean, we got these bozos that are sitting there, and it isn't a government that you're promoted forward by just doing wonderful, intelligent things, that you're competing against other people like in private industry. This is like, who's the friend of the president? Who's the friend of this person? And this is what's killing and strangling the nation.
Well, sometimes a glut of information is purposeful. It's on purpose to direct things their way, to make it more, it's going to operate better their way. So they put all this extra stuff in. And guys, I got to tell you, sure sounds like that's what they've done with Obamacare. They've made an absolutely ununderstandable program. And I kind of wonder if there was another purpose there, why it is so incredibly complicated. Like maybe they wanted to fail.
Once again, don't give liberals more credit than they deserve. These people are not that smart. The problem with the NSA, and it's going to be a problem with Obamacare too, now that you've brought that up, and is all constantly a problem in the financial community. You know, what little investing I've done, I know that if you can be inundated with information to the point where you don't know what to do.
No,
there's so much information. Exactly. You get paralyzed.
No, I think you have, it's like, yeah, I call the basics. You have to say, geez, I'm going to be a diversified portfolio of a little bit of bonds, a little bit of gold, a little bit of stock, a little bit of this, and I won't be continually pulled when that one thing starts running, because, you know, the Grim Reaper will always appear. He's always waiting there for you.
Right.
And you look in the government. How many lies do we have to be told as the American public by the group of bozos that's now been there over 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
When do you people wake up and understand they're not there for you? They're there for one person.
Yeah.
Their lives, their benefits. That's it.
You're absolutely right about that. And this fellow, Benny, wrote programs that could scan the internet and scan the telephone calls for the appropriate data and weed it out.
Target words.
As it's collected. But instead, the government does the opposite thing, the stupid thing. They collect all the data and then they try to sort it all out when they could be doing this simultaneously. And it does lead to a paralysis of, and also bad decision making, because you have too much of the wrong information to go with the right information.
And again, reflecting upon the financial aspect, it's called, what are the goals and objectives of what are you doing? Why am I doing this? What do I want to derive from this? And how are we going to get down to the answers we want? Not just collect, 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 step on everybody's feet to get, you know, what would be a much more minimal type situation that you need.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, some of the documents that Snowden, this fella, I forget his first name, Snowden, we all know, Edward Snowden, some of the documents that he has released detail how people within the NSA are complaining. You know, it's like, it reminds me of some old cartoon or something, you know, where a guy's sitting there and all of a sudden stuff starts falling on his head and eventually, you know, gets to be so much that he can't use it. That's what's going on inside the NSA. They are being inundated with so much information that they can't process it in real time, much less even weeks or months later. Which led to the president admitting on Friday or last week when he gave his news conference that in spite of all of this data collection, they cannot specify one incident, one terrorist act that it has thwarted. Not one. Helped.
And Mike, what's your opinion of this, of Snowden?
You know, the answer in my opinion is he was not a good American. No matter what his opinions may have been, you can see he's a young fella. He's a naive fella. He came from, I call, a questionable situation.
Liberal background.
Yeah, a liberal background. And the people that he destroyed in the sense that he tries to justify what he did, you know, but the reality of what you did really destroyed some very good individuals that were really, truly here to help America. Were you here to help America? I'm not sold on that story right now.
Yeah, and then he goes and gives information to the Russians and the Chinese.
He could have actually achieved what he wanted if he went straight to the media.
All right. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, I want to ask Mike about somebody that we think is a pretty good American around here, Phil Robertson of the Duck Dynasty. Mike, for the first time, watched some Duck Dynasty last night, so I want to get his take on that.
And, I still haven't seen it.
And once again, folks, you are really missing out. 407-774-8255 is the number if you would like to join us. And Nostradamus will be joining us a little bit later on. We are going to get to some football because, you know, the bowl season is here, and I'm excited to get Mike's take on several games. So please stay with us.
And like I mentioned to Mike McBath, who's a former professional football player, I don't know anything about professional or college ball, although I do like some of the college games, I'll say that. So, but I love individual sports, and I'll listen to what you guys say. I'm the American Adversaries. You should listen, too. We'll be back.
It's political, professional wrestling at its finest. The American Adversaries on 660 WORL.
And welcome back to the show. That's right, folks. We are the American Adversaries Drive Time. 407-774-8255 is the number. I was happy to see that Phil Robertson has come out and stated that he's not going to back down from what evidently, you know, people want him to back down, which is basically just expressing his views. It appears as though that the people who are backing down are people like Cracker Barrel and others who took their stuff off the shelves only to catch an earful from their patrons and put the stuff back on the shelves.
And then Jesse Jackson, the Reverend, has to step in and not only target the Duck Dynasty people, but also Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
I'm always curious about Jesse Jackson. Doesn't he have all these illegitimate children?
He sure does.
I mean, and I mean this. I mean, what ministry did he work under? Can anybody tell me that?
That's
one?
A question we've asked around here. We've never gotten a good answer.
I always call him.
He's spreading the word and spreading the seed.
I know. You talk about, I mean, what a complete phony. You know what I mean? And this shouldn't even exist in our society. These people walk around as the ultimate end and the ultimate person to make a statement. He should stay so far away from this Duck Dynasty situation because Jesse.
Oh, no, he has to embrace it.
Well, I'm glad you said that because he is a phony.
But without a doubt.
You told me before the show when you said you watched it for the first time that one of the reasons – tell our listeners, if you will, what you told me why the show is successful. Because it's exactly the opposite of Jesse Jackson, which is a phony.
Right. I mean, I've never seen it. And last night, I'm sitting home. I think they had, like, repeats on in a row.
Oh, yeah.
And
I've been playing these marathons ever since this controversy has broken. That show has played
more. And that shows
more.
You how much. Yeah. But I watched it, and I'm thinking, you know what? In a simplistic way, this was pretty funny. And it was sort of reminded me when I go way back of the Beverly Hillbillies, which was one of the most innocent, unique little shows
and
out there.
Successful.
And extremely successful. And I can understand why these people wouldn't like it. Because the people that they're on the show are, you know, these are very successful people that they hide them in simplicity. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
In other words, believe me, the guy who runs the company is really sharp. Oh, believe me, Phil's really sharp.
Yeah.
And it's a case that, but they made it a funny, and I call moralistic type situation in the sense that these people speak out that, hey, this is what I think is right. This is my passion. And this is why we go forward at Duck Dynasty. I like people that have character. I like people who have foundations and what they believe. And I'm so tired of what I call the peripheral whatever.
Well, and also, I think what you're saying is they come off as being dumb like Columbo. Remember Columbo? Yeah, I'm a dummy. I don't. You have to explain it. Every time. Yeah. You know, he's, you know.
And you know what? It's simplistic humor, which was really pretty darn funny when I watched it. I'm thinking, I can't believe I continue to watch this. But you know what? It was funny.
And it is. It's the women are women, the men are men, and they're proud to be that.
You got it.
All right, let's go to Brad, who has some thoughts on this. Brad, thank you for calling. And by the way, how was your Christmas holiday?
Oh, fine. Thank you for asking. Thank you very much, guys.
Excellent. Thank you for calling.
I wanted to point out a lot of news channels are not picking up on this, the rank hypocrisy of this whole Duck Dynasty issue, which points to this being hating on Christians and their religion and their faith. And I'll show you what I'm talking about. As you know, the rap artists, and you can just pull up any number of them, and that's in the public forum, and this is what they do for their job, and you pull up some of the rancid, hateful lyrics, how they talk about women and girls. That's somebody's mother.
And gays.
Oh, of course. And yet, it's been going on now for years, and yet big corporations that front these record labels, not a peep. So if you guys will keep up that mantle and show, expose this rank hypocrisy, this will go away even faster, because that's what it is. And that can't fly, obviously, in this society, in a free society, because CNN won't touch it, nobody will touch it. But if we start to beat that drum and talk about it, then stuff like this will happen less and less, I think.
Well, I think Brad has made very good commentary here in the sense that, you know, we're letting, you know, when I was a much younger person, it used to be the majority rules, but you rule with respect for the minority.
Sure.
You know, when I say minority, I mean whatever. But the case is here is, what will we do without the Ten Commandments? Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not covet one's wife. Thou shalt not do this. You know what? You would have such a dysfunctional society, as you see in Hollywood, as you see in Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the two most dysfunctional places in this country. And do you think these are good, wholesome, honest Americans where integrity is number one?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I believe Phil Robertson is making it a point to reshape the discussion in America, if you will. He is definitely making it a point, because he definitely, he kind of reminds me of you, Lair, because he has this sort of nostalgic view of the past where people did respect one another more, and family was more important, you know, and these basic wholesome morals and ideals were more important and more prominent in our society, and he wants to make that happen again.
And when you think about it, more intelligent and more logic.
Right.
More logical.
Exactly.
No, and like you fellows are just putting forth, the idea is that if we can get America to the point that they understand responsibility, you know, they understand the moral background, and I love the word moral. What does moral really mean? All I know it means is we have to treat people with great respect. We don't need the government. Don't dictate to me anything. You people have failed in every aspect and every area that you go into. You're a complete failure. And the majority now, who is the big majority, needs to fire back. We've had it. We've had it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks again, Brad, for that call. We appreciate you being out there. And you folks can join us, too, at 407-774-8255.
You got a problem there, Mike. How do you shrink the beast?
Well, I think it's a case, right? Again, we have to be more verbal during the time of elections, maybe be a bigger attack dog, you know, because reality is we've let them do the most rottenest things you can to individuals who are quality people. They'll do anything they can to try to make themselves look good. Well, you know what? Maybe we've enough is enough. We have to start firing back like Phil.
Exactly.
And people like that and the people that have visibility. We got to just stop this. Enough is enough.
Exactly. And all I can say is I'm so glad to see him taking this tack, because every time before when some conservative has found themselves in a predicament like this, what do? They march out and apologize about it, just like Paula Deen did. Now, she's no conservative. Now, she's a big Democrat. She's a big supporter of Obama. And look what they did to her. Mm-hmm. All right? And what did she do? She came out crying and apologizing and stuff. She's gone. She may eventually come back, but he is in the driver's seat. He knows it, and he's... I think it's like I said. I think he wants to be right where he is at.
When have either Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson ever admitted one of their stupid, huge mistakes, which they both have made time and time again? Oh no, they just ignore it and just go on, and yet they stay in the public eye.
No, I mean that is one of the major atrocities that goes on in this country is the two big bozos. I mean, Al Sharpton, come on. You know, my dog has a higher IQ than that. Give me a break.
I hate to say it, and I suppose they may know this, but they are basically tokens.
They are token black people.
Good point, Chris.
I mean, they don't represent their constituency.
But the liberal media uses them every chance they get.
Mm-hmm.
That token. All right, folks, we're no tokens around here. We are the American Adversaries. When we come back, we're going to talk some college football. And I want Mike to relate how he got job security at the Bills. You will love this.
Here is tonight's American Adversary Soundbite RX.com News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Tonight's SoundbiteRx.com News Minute is being brought to you by Lake Mary Jewelers. For that special gift, for that special someone, go to Lake Mary Jewelers at the intersection of Lake Mary Boulevard and Lake Emma Road. Call them today, 407-878-6230. Now, here's Christopher Hart with Ted Bogert of SoundbiteRx.com.
Ted, in his end-of-the-year press conference, President Obama made a rather startling revelation about the actual effect of the NSA's metadata collection practices.
That's right, Chris. Of course, anyone who defends the actions of the NSA in regarding to collecting all the domestic phone records and the huge numbers, including Barack Obama, they usually cite the 9/11 terror attacks to justify what the agency does and how intrusive it is. But at that press conference, Obama came up blank when he was asked if he could name one single case where the NSA program stopped a terrorist attack. So he could find nothing, he could cite nothing, which has been, of course, all of the opponents of the NSA and what they're doing. That's exactly what they've been saying. There isn't a single instance where all of this data collection has stopped any terrorist attack.
In fact, the president's very own task force said that it could find no example that could justify the practices of the NSA.
Correct. There's a law professor, Jeffrey Stone. He actually served on the presidential task force. They were charged with reviewing the NSA program, and they couldn't find a single incident that would justify the NSA's actions. They tried, and that's what the article says. They actually tried to find one, but they couldn't find any. And then former acting CIA director Michael Morell, he was appearing on Face the Nation, and he was definitely lauding the program, saying the NSA was protective. But at the very end of the program, or later in the program, he actually admitted that the program to date has not played a significant role in stopping terrorist attacks in the United States. So once again, we're back to square one. NSA is all intrusive, all in our business, all in the world's business. And the reason that they keep citing it as this amazing program is that it's thwarting terrorist attacks when in reality they can't cite a single one.
Okay. All right, folks. Thanks again, Ted. You can get this kind of news, the news that you can actually use, at SoundbiteRx.com. So please go to SoundbiteRx.com and find out what's going on. It's good medicine. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I took on the Iron Sheik from Iran. I took on Nikolai Volkov from the USSR. I took on Andre the Giant from France. I just want you to know, time for more political mayhem with the American Adversaries. Tough guy, how about a ho?
Ho, here we go. And, of course, that's Hacksaw Jim Duggan, great friend of Mike McBath's there. And thanks to Mike, he's become a great friend of ours as well. So welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries. I am Christopher Hart, along with Mike McBath, former Buffalo Bill, and Lair Adams, who has never been a Buffalo Bill.
he was closer to a Jill.
He watched it one time. Yeah, there you go.
I was on the Martin County High Wrestling team, I'll have you know, and in college
too.
There you go. All right, excellent.
Very good.
All right, folks.
I like MMA.
Join us if you'd like on the line, 407-774-8255. You know, in the last segment, we were talking about Phil Robertson, and I didn't know, don't know if you know this, but he played at Louisiana Tech.
I do know that. And he actually was a pretty reasonable football player.
He was the starting quarterback ahead of a fellow by the name of Bradshaw.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
that's why I say the show is so amusing when you realize none of them, they're so much smarter than what they project themselves.
Right.
But they were pretty smart to project themselves the way they did because look what it did financially.
Absolutely.
They're great. They're absolutely the funniest group I've seen for quite a while.
And by the way, Phil Robertson, I've been reading his book again, Happy, Happy, Happy. Mm-hmm. And he did. They came from dirt. They were dirt poor. Dirt poor. The reason he hoed in the field, hoed in the cotton fields along with the blacks is because they were as poor as the blacks back then. It took him about 30 years to build his empire. And he started out selling those duck calls at $10 a piece. I want to talk just real quickly about your football career, because we were talking about this at dinner the other night, and I've heard you say this story before, and I've been meaning to get you to say it on the air, because it's a touching story in a lot of different ways. But tell us how you found out that you had job security with the Buffalo Bills.
Well, I always go back, and like even in business and in life, you always look for the word opportunity.
Right.
And I was always one. It was pretty perceptive in the sense that if opportunity is there, jump all over it. Well, going into my first year with the Bills, and this was sort of the Bills were pretty pathetic. You know, I mean, they were pathetic. They had been a very good team. They had won the AFL, or American Football League, and then there was the merger and everything. And so, you know, I had been drafted by the Bills, a fifth-round draft choice, and I hung on just by my fingernails and made the team. Now we go into the second year. The second year is where you go from potential to you better perform and we'll see you later. Well, we're going into the second year, and that's the year they had brought O.J. Simpson to come into the Bills, yep. You know, and he was probably the most grandiose star that you would see out there in professional sports, maybe, even at that time.
Yep.
So he comes on, and John Roush had just also come over. He had been the head coach of the Oakland Raiders, which were the terror of football back in the 60s and early 70s, and he had come to the Buffalo Bills. So we had two saviors, John Roush, O.J. Simpson. Well, you know, what actually happened was we go through preseason, and our veterans who were older fellows didn't perform too well. We're at the end of the sixth preseason game. Back then they played six preseason games. That's when men were men. And but what happened was we go through the sixth preseason game. I think we were down in the Astrodome, you know, down in Houston, right?
Yep.
And, I mean, this is John Rouse, the head coach. We got O.J. Everybody's excited except for one thing. At the end of six preseason games, we're 0-6, right? And you know, the coach is probably thinking to himself, why did I ever do this? This is going to destroy me, right?
Yeah.
So, by luck, I had been playing defensive end. They had switched me from offense to defense, where I really had played at Penn State. So what happens is we go into the locker room. It was another disaster. We got annihilated. I think it was like 38-7 or something. This is the last preseason game. Now you start the season, right? So I'm sitting in my locker, and I wore contact lenses. And somebody had stuck their fingers in my eye during the game, and so my eyes are pouring out water, and I'm sitting in my locker, and my head's bent down, and the rest of the fellas, you know, they're party guys, they're older guys, they really are at the end, they could really care, you know.
Right.
So all of a sudden, this new head coach, you know, he looks around the locker room, and he's looking at everybody trying to grasp a straw of hope, and he goes like this. He says, there's only one guy in this locker room that cares. And I'm like, and I'm seriously, I'm like this. I'm holding my head down. I'm wondering who that is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, geez, I wonder if I know the guy or anything, right? So all of a sudden, there's a true story. I look up, and he's pointing at me. He goes, this guy cares, and as long as I'm with this team, he's going to be here. So, you know, I'd pop right out of the locker and go, you're right, coach, you're right. You know, like, and true story, I lasted longer than the head coach.
Oh, my gosh.
He thought you were
getting
so upset by the defeat, you were crying. So.
I know.
That's great.
So, you know, right place, right time. You know how that goes.
Right place, right time. Before we get to college football, one question about pro football. You know, this year they're playing the Super Bowl in New York in an open-air stadium. Did you like playing in domes better or open-air stadiums with a real grass field.
Hello, Buffalo. How would you like to play in blizzards? I mean, we literally had a couple games I can remember. I remember we played a Cincinnati Bengals. Greg Cook, it was a quarterback there. And I remember I was one of the few. I think I maybe even scored a touchdown by mistake. It is so miserable. The people in the stands could not see what was going on in the field. You know, the sod has been, you know, back then.
Oh, yeah.
It was all torn up. It was like you're running in a cow pasture. And the reality of it was, I think the whoever was the best team would never really show. I don't like, personally, when it's a Super Bowl that both teams have achieved great status. They've gotten to the point where the culmination of all your months of work have come together and all the advertisers, everybody here. I don't want outside environment to distract from the game.
Oh.
And, you know, I'd rather just let's go indoors, let's get it on, my friend, or let's go down south, let's get it on. Because when you get into an atmosphere, which could happen, you know this, up in New York, you get a big snowstorm that night or something, you know, is my running back really as effective as he normally is? Is my wide receiver as good as he is? Can my quarterback? I don't know. Now, if I'm a betting man, I'd like that because who knows what's going to happen. But if I were on either of the team, I'd rather say, look, our best man against your best man. We've gotten to the end. There's a lot of money on the line. Let's get it on. Well, you know what? Put me indoors. I don't want to go through this. So I don't like the fact that it's in New York because if it's inclement weather, which I would bet
it might be
50,
good chance.
Yeah. And then the other thing is it's going to be too hard for me to get to the parties in New York.
Anywhere in New York is too hard.
Somebody might be able to help you out as a fellow who's from Long Island, and, of course, that would be our very own Nostradamus. Let me go ahead and bring him into the conversation. Dennis, how are you doing this afternoon at headquarters?
Yeah, you know, Mike, I can get you around. One of my jobs when I worked for the radio station in New York City that did Giants football was I got to drive the golf cart with the Giants helmet onto the field before the game.
Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. Now, I will tell you one story. We played in the Polo Grounds, and this was OJ's either first or second year, and I'm in our bus. We were staying on – our bus broke down, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden about 25 cabs pull up. We each get in a cab with somebody. Well, in the cab with me is OJ, right? So now we're driving. We're trying to get to the stadium on time and everything. This is how archaic it was.
Right.
So we're pulling into the stadium, and the guy goes, hey, what are you doing? I said, well, my name's so I'm you know, with the Buffalo Bills. And I said, that's O.J. Simpson. He goes, yeah, I'm Dick Nixon, too, pal. That's New York, right?
There you go. There you go. Mike, college football season's coming to a close. And, of course, the bowl games have already, actually, a couple of them have already started playing. And you made a point. You think there's actually too many bowl games.
I think for a lot of reasons. I mean, again, if they were all profitable and if there was a great deal of charities that would derive benefits from this, you know, I'd be 100% for it. But I just have a question like the other day, and certainly TV helps the funding, but I watched like the Hula Bowl the other day. It was on TV. And, you know, there actually looked like there was more people on the two teams that played in its sidelines than there were in the stands.
All right.
And I'm just trying to figure out, you know, where are we going when we have teams that are 6-6 playing each other, 7-5? I mean, do I really, as the American consumer and viewer and sports addict, want to watch this?
How many bowls did you say there are this
35
year?
35 bowls this year. And I looked all down the list. The only one I saw missing was the Bud Bowl. What happened with that one?
I'll probably be at that one later tonight.
<All right. laughs>
Dennis, is there any one particular bowl you'd like to ask Mike about before I ask him about a couple?
Well, I would, but I don't see Penn State in a bowl.
Oh boy, was that a low shot.
When did they get their bowl bid back?
I think, you know, we have 2 years left on our NCAA restriction, which, you know, the Paternos have a suit, which is moving through the courts.
I was going to say, may that be shortened?
That's going to be shortened. They've already shortened our... we were supposed to be limited on scholarships. They gave us more for the incoming year, and then they gave us more for the next year. And the reality of it is I think the NCAA realized they're in big trouble. We win this suit. No, boy, you're in big trouble. Mm-hmm. We're not going after $1 million. We're going after big-time money. So
I'm looking at the teams that are playing in bowls, and it looks like Penn State could have beaten about a third of the teams playing in bowls this year.
I would say a third of them they could have. And it's even, and I will say that I think this will be a great game that's taking place with Wisconsin playing, South Carolina. I think that's going to be a terrific game. But Penn State beat Wisconsin. But I think it's going to be a terrific game. I think
you think it's going to be one of the more competitive
One of the more competitive games out there. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun because Wisconsin has avid followers.
Fans, yeah.
So they're going to be there. And so does South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be a very good game for the city of Orlando.
Heck, there might even be a few Gator fans that show up out there just because of the old ball coach. You know,
well,
and they don't have anywhere else to go.
Oh, I know. And I know Steve keeps sticking them. Going, I hope all your Gator fans show up at our bowl.
Can I ask you a question about the Gators?
Yeah.
What do you think about the coach? Do you think he's the right coach for the Gators? I mean, there's a lot of Bull Gators out there.
I think he needs at least another year. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, like the article the other day, which they were reflecting on the number, there was like six or seven kids transfer.
Yeah, I think Greg Diaz wrote that article.
Yeah, but understand, on every recruiting class, after about 2 years, you know, it's pretty much you're going to see who's going to play for the team and who will never play.
Right.
You know, so the reality of it is not that I know that they won't play or not, but – you know, that shouldn't be held against the coach. These people are going to leave. They'll probably, in most cases, not play. And it's a case that, you know, he deserves at least one more year. I mean, because he did very well his first year, and then he has a terrible year this year. And, I mean, I think they're too quick to pull the trigger. But I think he's going to have a tough time next year because recruiting's is becoming a lot more difficult when you've lost that number of games.
And with FSU.
And then the media turns on you, and everybody's turning on you. And then FSU's on the rise. Miami's on the rise.
Right.
And UCF's on the rise. Nice situation to be in, right?
Yeah. By the way, that was George Diaz that wrote that article. I think I said Greg. It was our friend George Diaz. Speaking of UCF, they're the underdog against Baylor. You think that's right?
Probably. You know, I mean, the reality is I'm a big UCF fan. You know, I love how the school has just moved on over the years. And, I mean, their academics, their athletic program, everything has just been a complete success, in my opinion. Now, I'm trying to figure now, if I truly had to bet my money, what would I do? And I look at this, and, you know, the last three, four games for UCF, they sort of walked the line. They were sort of like Auburn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the reality of it is, you know, at some point it goes the other way. Now, I hope it's not this upcoming game.
Right.
Now, I do think the game is immensely important also to Bortles, the quarterback. You know, a lot of people are screaming that he's going to be a number one draft choice. He's going to be in the top 15 fellows picked and everything. I believe this will determine his fate on the spot, meaning if he goes out with a big national audience like that and he performs, without a doubt, number one draft choice. But if he doesn't perform, welcome back to UCF next year.
Dennis, any questions on that?
Yeah, a bunch of so-called experts in the college football world are predicting that the Baylor-UCF game is going to be the biggest blowout of them all. And we've only played five or six bowl games already. Two of them have already had 25-point winning margins. Do you think UCF is going to get blown out that badly, or do you think they can keep it close?
No, I think that their defense has been, and this is probably the right word, relatively steady. You know, they're pretty good. But it's a case that, and then their offense, as good as it's been, has been somewhat spotty too. Because remember, you remember the Temple game, you know, and a couple of these other games. You know, the curtain of death was sitting there. But the reality is they pulled it out in the last minute or so.
Right.
Now, I'm not sure when you play a team like Baylor, who has played a lot of, you know, high-flying, high-quality teams, that opportunity is going to be presented to you again. But what I'm hoping is that they get off in the first quarter, you know, and if it's competitive, where it's 7-7, you know, no one's run away from anybody, and mentally they decide, you know what, we can do this. Because I love playing a game if I'm the underdog, because what fun that is, because I got nothing to lose.
Right.
And when if they take him into the beginning of the fourth quarter and this game is close, I'd say UCF's going to have an awful good chance of winning it. I think the most vital period will be that first, you know, quarter.
Quarter of the game. That answer your question, Oscar Dennis?
Yeah, it sure does. I think another key is going to be the first possession in the third quarter. Coming out of halftime, whoever gets the ball and does something well in their first possession, going to have a huge advantage.
Presuming the game is at least reasonably close.
Right, being at reasonably close, and usually with every game, that is, you just want to see how the team comes out of the locker room, and, oh, boy, if I'm on defense and they score on me right away, not good. Yeah. But, so that is also an area where the, you know, hopefully goes right for the Fighting Knights.
For the Fighting Knights of UCF. Okay, folks, please stay with us. We're going to go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we got one more segment to go, and I got a few more games to ask Mike McBath about. And we'll be right back.
This is Sunny, the California girl, and I've been around a lot of big, hunky, sexy, tough men. I like men like that, but only when they're brainy, like the American Adversary, on News Talk 660 WORL. These guys are sexy and smart.
Brainy, I like the way she says that. Yeah, we're brainy and sexy. Oh.
I learned something tonight.
Brainy and sexy, but our special guest today, Mike McBath, who's in the studio with us, a former professional football player and used to hang with O.J. Simpson. How did he get his hair in that helmet?
No, actually, he really did have a giant head. I mean, his nickname was Buckethead.
Really?
You know, oh, yeah. I mean, wow. Among the players, I mean, his head was physically gigantic. And but I have to say, now again, it certainly wouldn't be reflected in the media or anything else. He was a pretty affable, you know, congenial guy. And and if you, and I always say this is a true story, if you would have told me, hey, here's your team's picture, there's 40 guys there, one guy killed somebody, who was it? I would have never guessed him.
Wouldn't have guessed him. That's right. Awesome. By the way, we do have on the line our executive producer, Nostradamus, and he has a question for Mike McBath. Nostradamus, go ahead.
Yeah, Mike, I've heard people say that this year, for the last couple of years, the Big Ten Conference has been down, that they really haven't been what they've been in the past. How do you think they're going to do this year as a conference in their bowl games?
Well, I mean, I look at the premier game, which I sort of like the game. I like the matchup. I think it's going to be interesting. It's Stanford versus Michigan State. And Michigan State, I think it's going to be a real close game.
They're one of the better teams out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be 7 points one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
As for conference performance, I think this year, and like you said, I think the conference is down some. But, you know, do you really think the SEC, the bottom six, seven teams, were that good this year?
Yeah. Let me ask you, just sort of quick fashion here. Miami plays Louisville this Saturday here in Orlando. That should be a pretty decent game, you think?
I think it's going to be a great game because you got two great coaches, of which maybe neither of them will be with the team 4 weeks from now.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, in other words,
yeah,
I think Coach Strong, who's done an unbelievable job with Louisville, who has major roots in the state of Florida, meaning recruiting.
I'd love to
see
him.
I think this guy, if I had to make a bet, I think he might be bye-bye. But, you know, obviously nothing's been said.
I'd love to see him at Florida.
Al Golden, I know he's a Penn Stater. And Al Golden, everybody that knows Al, who's worked with him, said this is one of the great, great coaches out there, an unbelievable recruiter. And that's what you look for. You know, you got to have the animals if you're going to win the game.
Yeah.
And Al, and you notice that they're climbing back, they're climbing back, they're climbing back.
The Hurricanes.
I think this game, again, is going to be I think it's going to be a pretty exciting game. I think it's going to be pretty close. You got scoring capabilities. So I think it'll be a lot of fun.
By the way, folks, you can still get tickets for that game. That will be this Saturday, of course, at the Citrus Bowl. Clemson, Ohio State. Is Ohio State as good as their record? Or they really haven't played the toughest teams.
I know. I can't. That's a hard one. But I would say I would actually, and go down a record, I'd pick Ohio State over Clemson.
You would?
Yeah.
Right. Nostradamus, any last game picks from you for Mike?
How about this one, Iowa versus LSU in the Outback Bowl over in Tampa? How do you think Iowa's going to do?
You know, Iowa's an interesting study in recruiting because, you know, who is going to Iowa? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they have no population out there, in essence.
But corn.
Iowa does a great job taking what I call one- and two-star players, building them up, you know, looking for tall kids because they're not going to get the four- and five-star that the Florida schools get. But they're very competitive all the time. However, I predict them to lose.
Back into trouble.
How about that?
There you go. Okay, I've got one more for you. FSU Auburn. You think FSU is going to blow them out the way they've been blowing everybody else out?
I think FSU will win by at least 14 points. I mean, it's, and I'm not anti-Auburn in any respect. I think they have a very good team, but very good's not going to be enough. And the reality is Auburn has sort of run the same gauntlet that UCF did
right.
in the sense we got two or three victories, which we could be, instead of 11-1, we might be
8-4.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think FSU has really put together a very good program. So,
all right. Okay, thank you, Nostra Dennis. We appreciate you, and we'll be talking to you tomorrow night. And, folks, we'll be talking to you tomorrow night. And don't forget, we'll be playing Johnny Gunn's Year in Review audio clips, and I think you'll find it very entertaining. Thanks again for being with us. Yeah. Don't forget.
Now, are you playing those clips tomorrow?
Yeah,
tomorrow. Okay, tomorrow, and also Sunday?
Tomorrow, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We'll do it 4 days
Fantastic.
In a row.
Fantastic. We are the American Adversaries. We will be back.
Night, everybody.
News Talk 660 WORL. Altamont Springs, Orlando. 660 WORL.com.
Division of Salem Communications.
On the NASDAQ is SA.